As I was saying, my sincere apologies, there are no actual sheets for the shiur this week. You're going to have to take my word for it, because my computer died. Birth dynamics. Fortunately, I do a lot of my stuff on the internet now, a lot of it, and I had just uploaded the last week's shiur last week, so I didn't lose any audio or shiurim. But the last time I really backed up was before we went to Israel. It was like 2-3 weeks ago. So Baruch Hashem, you know, not the end of the world. But in the interim, in its absence, I'm in the process of replacing it. It takes time, so I simply did not have the opportunity to make sheets for you today. You're just going to have to take my word when I read you the sources that they're actually there. And I'm not making them up. Okay, turn please to Parshat Kitetze in the Chumash. What? As a scanner? I think it's Kitetze.
484?
My mistake. Hold on a second. We'll find out in a second. Yeah, that's where it is. But that's not what I want.
484 is the Tesele Chakra.
Here we are. By page 1028, it's in Shofti, my mistake. 1028. Perek Yud Zayin and Dvarim Pasuk Yud Dalet. Okay? Yud Zayin Pasuk Yud Dalet. We need to read this by way of introduction because we're in the middle of chapter 10 in Malachim. And this is just a good introduction to chapter 10 of Malachim, because then you'll understand why the Nevi was written in the way that it was written. When you come to the land that the Lord your God will give you and you shall inherit and dwell in it, and you shall say, I will place upon myself a king like all the nations around me. Okay, go ahead. Place upon yourself a king that God will choose. From the midst of your brother you shall place upon yourself a king. And you may not place upon yourself an ish nachri, a foreign person. An ish nachri asher lo achichahu. So the Rambam derives from this. I don't know if anybody's aware. The Rambam says that from this we derive that a ger, a convert, cannot be a melech, a king of Israel. In addition, it says, from this pasuk, the Gemara says, melech velo malka, a king and not a queen.
Oh, thanks. Okay. Women can be present in congregation.
Well, that's exactly where I was going. So the Rambam doesn't say, I mean, many Rishonim say that this only refers to a king. Now, obviously, the pasuk, the verse is explicit about a king, but the Rambam takes it about three steps further. He says that not only was it referring to kings, he says, but any position of authority in Israel may not be held by a convert and also may not be held by a
female.
And that's why all of you can't be, well, most of you, you president. You want to be president? No? Okay. That's why most of you couldn't be the president of the Young Israel, because of this ruling of the Rambam based on this pasuk. Anybody wants to be president, take it up with somebody else. Okay. No, but he's in a position of authority. Is he not? You know who's the authority over? Over the staff. Tes Zion. Rak. But Lo Yarbe Lo Tsuchim, he may not have too many horses. Lo Yashiva Tam Ipsraima Laman Harbot Sus, he may not return the nation to Egypt in order to have a lot of horses. Why? Because if you want horses, who's got the horses?
Israel.
Egyptians, okay? And God said, "Lo tosifu mashu b'derech hazeot. You shall not continue to return in this way anymore." I mean, God doesn't want us to go back to Egypt. And if we need horses, if you want to buy a lot of horses, the only place to get horses is Egypt. And the Kachavarga doesn't want us to go there, so don't have too many horses. Oh, and
I can't think that horses can mate.
What?
Why do you have to keep going to Egypt if you've got a couple of horses? You're going to have more horses. It takes a while. It doesn't take that long. Because you've got 10,000 horses. You're going to have a nice...
You know, I would say that, but I think also the Egyptians had a certain... what is it, equestrian?
The horse itself. They had the Arabian horses.
But they also had, they knew how to raise them. You know what I'm saying?
Husbandry.
Right. It's not so simple to make a horse and to get a horse to be the right way. And when the horses needed treatment, or there was something wrong with the horses, or the horses weren't behaving, so you have to go back and get more horses, because they're the horse experts.
They had the best bloodline.
Yeah, I mean, whatever. That's what it was. They had the Arabian horses. It was well known.
And it takes a year. I think the gestation period is 1 year.
I don't know if you're right. I mean, in theory, if you have a dog, you're going to have a lot of dogs. But people still go to dog raisers, don't they?
For a particular breed.
What was that? Why for a particular breed? What would you want your horses to do?
You would go to a breeder if you wanted the healthiest, best temperament, most intelligent dog.
Right.
You would not go to somebody doing a backyard breeding.
What kind of horses would a king want?
The best.
Why? What are they for?
Battle.
Right. Right. You don't want anybody could make a horse.
You don't want plow horses.
But you don't want some little mare when you're fighting and all of a sudden the horse, you know, your enemy the Egyptians were good at that apparently, and it was well known in the time of the Torah, and we're gonna see, how do we know it's true? Because we're gonna see, where do people go for horses? In addition, Yudzayin, Velo Yarbe Lo Nashim. Nor shall he have too many wives. What's the maximum?
18
wives, right? Velo yasur levavo. How do you translate that with a word? Velo yasur levavo. I see you cheating.
Oh, I thought you wanted to know how they translate.
No, I want to know how you translate it.
Heart shouldn't.
Velo yarbe nashim.
There you go.
Is that connected to lo yarbe lo nashim, or is it independent?
Could be both.
Right. Velo yarbe lo nashim. Velo yasur levavo. Right. Look how Artsko translates it. And he shall not have too many wives, so that his heart not turn astray. How does Artsko read the words? They read it as Velo Yabelo Nashim, not Velo Yasu Levavo. Shelo Yasu Levavo. Right, it's connected. What is the reason why he can't have too many wives?
So
his heart shouldn't turn astray. He's busy enough with what? With 18 wives. Enough? Right. What? Oh, and another thing, what?
All those mothers-in-law.
He's the king. You know, those are the mothers-in-law. Okay, but that's another. And he may not have too much money, too much gold and silver. Why not? What kind of king is that? Can't really have too many horses. I mean, he can't have a very powerful military. Can't have too much money. Can't have too many wives. Who wants to be king? What's the point of being king?
That's why they talk about the royal house of Denmark.
Yeah.
They're egalitarian. They have normal houses. And
I mean, they're not rich like the Queen of England?
No, they don't do that. They bicycle down the streets just like everybody
else. Isn't it interesting? So let's go back to Hasuki David in a second. You say, Ashima alai melech, I want a king. Kechol hashiv hagoyim asher sevivotai. Like everybody else, like all the nations. Right. So what does God then say? You want a king like everybody else's king?
But we're going to limit his power.
No. Can't.
You can't.
Except that it wasn't Shlomo certainly excessive and all.
Whoa. I'm reading this by way of introduction. Okay. I don't have to wait the whole series. Just yet. Okay.
Just came back.
Vaya! Kishito akisei mamlachto. And when he's sitting on his royal throne. The katab lo mishneh Torah azot al sefer mifnei akonim al abir. And he should write this mishneh Torah. What is mishneh Torah? What's Mishneh Torah? Anybody know what Mishneh Torah is? What does Mishneh Torah refer to? No, Mishneh Torah, well, second Torah, okay, at Mishneh Torah Hazot, Rashi says, is two Sefer Torahs. Okay, he has to have a second Sefer Torah, which is excessive. Why does he have to have two?
One for himself.
One for home, and one is a travel edition. Okay, you need two Torahs. He has to read the Torah every day of his life. Why? The mind yilmad yirat Hashem elokav. So he will learn to fear the Lord his God. Bishmor kol divrei haTorah hazot, ve'atachukim me'ilah la'asotam. To guard the words of the Torah and these commandments to do them. Why? Levilteirum levavo me'echav, so that he may not raise his heart up above his brethren. Ulevilteisur min hamitzvah yamim esmol, so that he does not deviate from the commandments to the right or to the left. So that he will have long days on his king, on his kingdom, he and his sons in the midst of the land. You want to be a Jewish king? You want longevity? You don't need a powerful army. You don't need money. You don't need wealth. You don't need prominence. You don't need power. You don't need any of those things. What do you need? You need God. You need God. If you have God, you'll get everything you want. If you forget God, you won't have anything you want. And there's the rub. Because in layman's terms, or in the normal way of things, take your average monarchy. How did the monarch maintain his grip on his monarchy?
Payoffs with money.
Payoffs. How else?
Power.
Power. Absolutely. Right? You're powerful, you're strong, meaning everybody else is so intimidated they wouldn't dare attack you. And now what's God saying? He's turning it on its head. Every other kingdom might be that way. Every other kingdom might gain international prominence by its economic prowess, by its military might. Except not the Jewish kingdom. And some of the Jewish kingdom is on the bed. The Jewish kingdom, yes, it's strong. I'm not saying it's not strong, but it doesn't have to have arms build up. It's intelligent, it's wise, but it doesn't have to be wealthy. That's not the mark of a Jewish kingdom. A Jewish kingdom is a godly kingdom. And as soon as you forget that, and then we know the Jewish kingdom. Okay, so now that we've had that short introduction from the Torah, now we may turn to our Navi. Page 112, chapter 10 we are. Still, Pasuk 18. Pasuk Yud Chet. Get my place in my books. See, I have actual books. I didn't make it up. I've got notes. I've got books. I've got it all. Okay.
And got
pushes. Yeah, pushes are great. Vayas ha-melech kisei shen gadol vayetzapehu zahav mufaz. King made a great throne of ivory. Now, what did we say about money in the times of Shlomo last week? Will we end off? So much money. People were just like sending money to Shlomo by the boatload. This many talents of gold and that many talents of gold and these jewels and that diamonds. Just an incredible amount of wealth.
Why?
Pay him off, tributes. He was the most powerful man. That's how you endear yourself to the most powerful man. You send him stuff. Okay? So Shlomo made this great throne of ivory overlaid with sparkling gold. Sheish ma'alot lakisei. The throne had six steps. V'rosh agol lakisei mi'acharav. And a rounded top to the throne at its back. V'yadot mizeh mizeh makom hashevet. And of course it had, armrests. Ushnayim arayot ondim etel hayadot, and two figures of lions standing next to the arms. Ushnei masar arayim ondim sham al sheish ha-malot, mizeh u-mizeh. Lo na'asaken l'chol ha-mamlachot. And of course, it had 12 lions on each of the six steps. And of course, anybody want to guess what the midrash, I wouldn't call these midrashim, I would call these folk tales about the throne of Shlomo. Anyone want to guess what the folk tales about the throne of Shlomo say about these lions?
They probably came to life at some point.
They did come to life. When someone would step on the throne, they would come to life and roar. And if you were Shlomo?
No problem.
I don't know what would have happened if someone who was not Shlomo would be so impudent as to attempt to pass through the gauntlet of lions.
Feeding time.
Right, on the way up. Right, with the, I've seen another version. I was actually reading my kids from the King Shlomo story, and each step had a different animal. And as you walked down the step, as Shlomo walked down the step, they would bray, or a rooster would crow, or what have you. It's in there. It's in. I mean, midrashes are different types of midrash. There's midrash from Chazal, and then there's what I would call later midrash of the Yalkuti. Remember, the Yalkut Mamloes, the Yalkut Shimoni, a different Yalkut. A Yalkut means it's a collection. Right, so there's a treasure trove of lore, of stories about our great figures, our historical figures. So now, where does the line between midrash and myth begin and end? Somewhere before the roaring lions. Except, what did the midrash say about the fruit in the Beit HaMikdash on the trees? The golden fruit? Right, that was on the midrash. We didn't see that. Excuse me. So, take with it what you will. Who knows? Anyway.
Put the coins in it.
What?
Recording.
Game? There was a game? There was a game last night?
I watched the commercial.
What game are you referring to?
Super.
The Super Bowl. Oh, Pasnish. I don't watch such things. I don't watch such things. Pasnish. Yes? What? There was an article in the Jewish press this week, actually, about whether sports has any redeeming Jewish value. And the author of the article said yes. Whereas I, on the other hand, being a sports fan, say no. There is no redeeming value in sports other than to get you excited about something that has nothing to do with you. It was still a great game, or so I hear. Okay. Right. What's that?
New York is having a big celebration.
Why? Oh. Okay. I wouldn't know such things. Okay. Anyway. We did the 12 lines. Kaf Aleph. V'chol kli mashkei hamelech Shlomo zahav. V'chol kli beit yair levanon zahav sagor. Every vessel. Can you imagine, like, if everything in your house is gold?
Yeah.
You know, like, how do you brush your teeth? It's like a gold toothbrush. I mean, you know. Don't touch that. Like, your kids are walking around. Should I get the cups? No.
He brushed his own teeth. Someone did it.
Come on. Lo nechshav li bimei Shlomo l'umar. Shlomo didn't consider silver really worth anything. You know, it wasn't gold. It wasn't anything. Okay. Ki ani tarshish memelech bayam. The king had a tarshish fleet. Im ani chiram with the fleet of chiram. Achad l'shlosh shanim tavo ani tarshish nosei zahav v'chesef. Shenhabim v'kofim v'tukiyim. Once in every 3 years, the fleet would arrive carrying gold, silver, ivory, monkeys, and peacocks. What are the monkeys and peacocks for? Yes, right. You know, I mean, because these were considered, obviously, animals of opulence. You know, the peacock strutting its stuff, the monkey playing the musical thing, I guess, or collecting money from the hats. I don't know what the monkeys did, but they were entertaining. I mean, it was a symbol of opulence. Who had monkeys lying around? I mean, Vayigdal HaMelech Shlomo mikol malchei ha'aretz la'osher u'lechachma. The King Shlomo was great from among all the lands in wisdom and wealth.
He could speak to them, couldn't he?
He could talk to the animals, so they say. V'chol ha'aretz b'aksim b'nei Shlomo v'sumat chachmato asher natan Elohim b'libo. And everybody wanted to hear the wisdom of Shlomo, the God put in his heart. V'hema v'yimim ish minchato. So how did he get all this money? Because everybody wanted to come here as wisdom, right? When you want to come here, the king's wisdom, what do you got to do?
Bring a gift.
Okay? Klei kesef, klei zahav, usma ushlamot, v'neshek, v'samim, susim, pradim, dvar shana v'shana. Silver, gold, clothing, weapons, spices, horses, mules, each year's due in its year. Fine? V'yesof Shlomo, rechev uparashim. What Shlomo gathered? Horse and chariot. Vahilo Elef Va'arba Meot Rechev. He had 1,400 chariots. Ushneim Asar Elef Parashim. And 12,000 riders. How many horses is that?
12,000. Is it four per chariot?
No, I think they were small chariots. They were one rider, one per rider, two per rider. Vayanchein Ba'arei HaRechev Ilum Elef Shalom. He had to make cities in order to house these horses. Okay?
So here comes the question. Is that an excessive amount of horses?
Does 1,400 horses and 12,000 riders seem excessive?
You have to make cities just to accommodate.
Is it 14? Yeah, 400.
What?
Okay. No, I thought it was 14,000. No, never mind. It's 1,400.
Right.
Elef al-Bamot.
Look at Rashi for a second. Elef v'arba'amiyot rechev, Rashi on Chafvav. U'divrei yamin katuv, in divrei yamin it says, no, elef u'shvamiyot. Not 1,400 horses, 1,700 horses. Omer ani, Rashi says, elef v'arba'amiyot v'arei ha'rechev shalom. He had 1,400 in his chariot cities. V'ashalosh meot im ha'melech v'yushalayim, and then 300 others. So meaning he didn't have 1,400, he had 1,700, plus the 12,000 riders. Where do you put 13 or 14,000 horses? What does it cost to feed and care for 14,000 horses?
Wait, I thought it's 1,400.
No, plus he had 12,000 riders. What would he ride?
So I'm confused. There are chariot horses and then an additional horses that people load?
Sure.
Oh, okay.
Chariot's like a tank.
Right.
Right. So of course, on a rider is like, you know.
Riders go outside.
Right. Art tourism, all that.
All right,
okay.
So that's still, that's not an excessive amount? 14,000 plus another 1,400?
Vayitain Shlomo et hakesef Yerushalayim ka'avanim. King Solomon made the money in Yerushalayim like rocks, like stones. Ve'et ha'arazim natan kishikmim asher b'shreila l'rov. He made cedars as abundant as sycamores in the lowland. Cedar wood, very valuable wood. Sycamore wood? Right? So, okay. Umotza hashlusim asher b'shreila Yitzrayim. Where did he get the horses from? His horses were imported from Egypt. An association king traders was purchased at an association as an association at a set price.
Was there poverty?
What do you think? Compare the opulence of Shlomo to the wealth in America. Which is more? Shlomo's wealth pales in comparison to the wealth of America. Are there poor people in America?
Yeah, but there's more people too.
Proportionally?
Yeah.
Rich to poor?
No, I mean
population. Of course there were poor people. And what's unique here is that Shlomo is so rich. Of course there are poor people, and I'm going to prove to you there are poor people a little bit later. How do you think Shlomo got so rich? Who's going to feed all these horses? How do you feed all the horses? Who takes care of the horses? Horsemen. Who pays the horsemen to take care of the horses? Shlomo, right? From what?
From the taxes.
Whoa, now we get to hear it. From the taxes.
Sure, but he had enough wealth to maintain his household.
I don't understand.
What's enough?
Yeah, how many wives did he have?
A thousand.
How many do you think, how many punishers did each wife get?
How many wives?
How many attendants did each wife get?
Probably depended on her rank.
On her rank, who she was. One. Half an attendant. Who paid for those attendants? Who fed all those girls? Who took care of them? Who clothed them? Who housed them? How did he pay for it?
Taxes.
What?
There's enough money there.
Dowries.
Those are his money. That's his money.
His father's
money. His father's money, right.
Dowries. He gave up his servants to the queen.
To his wife. Chavtet. Vata'aleh vatekemer kavam yimitzay nesheshniot kasef. Right? A chariot could be bought from Egypt for 600 pieces of silver. B'sus mechamisha ameim. Of course, it's only 150. Right? Now we'd also export for all the kings of the Hittites and the kings of Aram. So it was very clear, it's very clear that they're getting the horses from where? And it's not one time purchases. There's a trade association going on here.
Horse cartel.
Right, there's a horse cartel. There's a Jewish horse cartel. When you import the horse, what comes along with the horse?
His rider.
What else does the horse bring with him?
His
that's what I was thinking. The horse brings his manure with
his
him.
Manure.
Right? And when he gets to where he arrives, what does he do?
They sell back the manure.
He deposits his manure. That's what he does. Right? He deposits his Egyptian fertilizer. Okay? Yeah, it's wonderful. It's wonderful. You think this trade association didn't also?
Dump manure?
Why are the Jews forbidden to go back to Egypt to buy horses, to establish trade relations, to need the Egyptians? Because when you go back to Egypt, you pick up from the Egyptians. When you're friendly with the Egyptians, you become like them, and you bring it back with you. And it becomes a part of you, and you deposit it, and it infects your country. What price does Shlomo have to pay in order to get all this, all these great horses from Egypt? Why in the world would the king of Egypt literally, militarily arm a rival king to the teeth, to the tune of thousands of horses?
It's his son-in-law.
Wow, very good. It's his son-in-law. What?
He made sure to
Mary-in-law. It's his son-in-law. There's nothing wrong with arming your son-in-law. We're all good friends. It's his son-in-law. The queen or the princess of Egypt? Let's see. Yeralef. That's what have we learned so far, the Torah says? What did the Torah say? Let's read it again. I'll read it for you.
To Egypt, not to buy the horses.
Kesef v'zahav lo yarbelo lo. Not too much money.
Not
right?
Too many
the
horses.
Money is like rolling in the streets. Okay? Not too many horses.
Yeah.
Got plenty of those. Not too many wives. V'hamela shlomo ahav nashim nachriot rabot. V'et bat paro. Yeah, I mean, it's like King Solomon loved very many wives, okay? Many foreign wives. At Bat Paro, and also Bat Paro, Moavot, Ammoniot, Adomiot, Chedoniot, Chitiot, you name the country.
He's got a wife.
He had them. He also had Jewish wives, but he had these wives too. Now, there's a lot to say on this pasuk. First of all, do you ever dock on Aleph? Nashim Rachayot Rabot. Okay, many, many foreign wives. Well, you have to ask a lot of different questions, okay? The first question is, well, ask me questions.
How can he marry women who weren't Jewish?
Yes, excellent question. How can he marry women who weren't Jewish?
How can he have Rabot?
How can he have very many wives? And we're not going to answer that question, but that's a very interesting. How can he marry so many non-Jewish wives? Anybody want to suggest an answer? Excellent. Very good. Very good.
Whether willingly or unwillingly.
What's the problem?
Well, they're not sure. The women are not making this choice. Obviously, it's done by their father.
Okay.
So the women are told, you're marrying him and you're converting. It's not a true conversion.
She says, okay, whatever.
She says, okay, whatever.
Right.
That's what I did. Okay. Whatever.
we don't need to go into that.
Not,
so detailed.
It's not from the heart. It's for the money and the prestige.
Right. Well, so what was King Shlomo's sin? What was his sin? So this
wasn't,
is a...
He wasn't supposed to touch my
animal. Right. Hav nashim nachri. I mean, obviously, there's many wives. I mean, like, what's going on? So what happened? What happened? So the Midrash says, I have a number of Midrash right now. I want to read to you. First, I'll read you a Midrash, and then we'll read the Radak together. Hav nashim nachriot. Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai Omer, this is from a Gemara Yerushalmi. Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai says, Ahav mamash liznut. Literally, he loved them, liznut. Translates znut. Immorality, impropriety. Right? He didn't marry them, he liked. Now, I would say this about Shlomo, but Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai did. He liked women. Chananya ben Achai Rabbi Yeshua Omer, Chananya says, Ashein velo titchatein bam. Right? Meaning he agrees, but you're not supposed to marry them. The first opinion is he loved foreign women. He didn't marry them. The second opinion is he married them. Okay? Which is also a problem. What's the problem? Intermarriage. You know what I'm saying? What do we say today? If Shlomo HaMelech were to walk into the Ungers of the Rogue Park and for Shabbos morning, we couldn't give him an aliyah.
Or you couldn't
have what? No, David didn't marry foreign women. I don't think so. Jewish women. Right? Couldn't give an aliyah. Think about it in those terms. King Shlomo will read his book, but we won't give an aliyah. Meaning, if we come to shul on Pesach morning, on Shabbos, we'll read Kohelet, or Shir Shirim, whichever one it is. Shir Shirim. So we'll read it, and then we'll say, Yamod, no, can't give an aliyah. When he was old. We'll see. Rabbi Yossi Omer, Rabbi Yossi says, look at this. The Mashchan, the Divrei Torah, with the Karvan, Tachas, Kanfei, Hashchina. Why did he marry all these women? He thought that he could draw them all into the words of God and the words of Torah. That if they'll be, I wouldn't say, not necessarily. He wasn't like his Kiruv project. I mean, that's a very good, interesting, potential Kiruv. You know, that's a good one. You know, maybe when I get into the Kiruv business, I marry women. You know what I'm saying? Probably be more effective than a lot of the Kiruv programming that goes on now. But okay, it wasn't that Shlomo. What? Wasn't that Shlomo wanted to be Mekarev then? It wasn't like his goal, but he felt that if he married them, he would be able to bring them under the auspices of God. That was his mistake. That's a little bit more generous than the first two, wouldn't you say? Right?
Not very.
Not very.
responsible.
What he thought, I mean, he's a God-fearing Jew. Like, if you're a God-fearing Jew, why wouldn't somebody who marries me come under my auspices in my house, they do my things, and so they'll be a servant of God?
Okay.
No.
Wouldn't they have to be willing to be converted?
They were willing.
Why not?
Would you like to marry the King of Israel, the most powerful man in the world? Yes. Oh, one catch. You got to convert to Judaism. Tough.
Big deal.
Big deal. Easy. That's why I was buying the computer today. So I went to Office Depot because somebody told me buy a certain computer. Fine. I go there and there's like a much more powerful computer that's $100 more. And it was like marked down. The guy says, oh, it's the floor model. I said, okay, if you mark it down even $50 more, I'll buy it. He said, fine. So he's wrapping up the computer and he says, oh, by the way, I didn't mention to you, at that price you have to pay $109 for a warranty. So I said to him, you know, I really resent the fact that you agreed to a price, and then sprung on me, well, what can I do? This is the rule. You know, I thought it was a very slimy tactic to first give me a price, and then, you know, once a person buys in, this is the way sales work. When a person already buys into the sale, he's going to be much more reluctant to back out. Oh, another $109, you get a warranty. You know, I just need to pay $109 for a $300 computer, but that's just me. No, about the other one. Okay. Rav Lezer Omar. Rav Lezer says, "Al shem gam oto hichtiu hanashim menachriot." Okay, that the women, these foreign women, caused him to sin, as we will soon see. I want to read you. You say it's not plausible. The Rambam says, this is another source that you will not see, but I won't read to you. In Hilchos Esrei Dia, the Rambam goes on a little tangent. And the laws of forbidden marriages about giur, about conversion. So he says the following: Al yaleil datcha, do not let it enter your mind. It's very, very sharp language. Do not let it enter your mind. Shishimshon, that Samson Hamoshiach et Israel, who saved Israel, O Shlomo Melech Israel, or Shlomo the King of Israel, Shenikra Yedid Hashem, who is called the Yedid Hashem, the friend of God. Nasu nashim nachriot begiutam, married foreign women. See, this is the problem when we read these stories. I want to digress for a minute because it's an important point. Yesterday there was a very, very fascinating symposium by the Jewish Forum here in Shul. One of the topics that came up was the topic of biographies of historical rabbinic figures. Meaning, the question is the following. Do you have the right to publish private matters? Let's say, there was a rabbi. His name was Rabbi Yechiel Yaakov Weinberg. He was called the Sridei Esh. He was really a gadol. He lived through the Holocaust, terrible life. He lived in Switzerland. He wrote a song. It was called the Sridei Esh. He's very well respected, a very, very unique and wonderful posek. And he's well accepted in the Jewish world as being a posek. So this professor, his name is Dr. Mark Shapiro, he described how in his research, he was writing a dissertation on the Sridei Esh, and in his research, he discovered that there were letters between Rabbi Weinberg, Rabbi Yaakov of the Sridei Esh, and a man named Rabbi Dr. Atlas, who was a teacher at the Hebrew Union College. And these letters between, you know, Rabbi Weinberg and Dr. Atlas, they run the gamut. They really, you know, about all kinds of topics. And they reveal an incredibly close relationship between Rabbi Weinberg and this Dr. Atlas. And when he found out about these letters, and he reads them, so the question is, these were private letters. You know, he was a good friend, and they used to send letters. They used to correspond back when people actually wrote letters. And the question was, does he have a right to publish them or not?
Yeah, very good question. Doesn't that sound interesting? Especially, do you have the right to publish text messages?
I don't want to go there.
No, but I'm saying, would that be the same?
That's a very different thing. I think very different.
If
a person perjures himself and it's public record.
No.
The text messages are a public record, by the way. Anyway, so it's a very interesting debate. And so somebody, the problem being, of course, when you reveal private things about individuals of great stature, of course, what do you do to them? You tear down their stature. You tear down, and the more revealing and the more personal, the more it tears it down. And it's a very good question. To what degree does one have the right to reveal private information about an individual? And so a gentleman got up, and I really thought it was inappropriate. I'm going to repeat what he said, because I thought it was very inappropriate, and you'll understand why. He said, well, what about the patriarchs? I mean, after all, Abraham pimped his wife Sarah to the king of Egypt.
Yes.
Well, I mean, hold on a second. Yeah. And so the response Dr. Shapiro gave actually correctly was, God decides what to write in his book. We have to grapple with what we write in our books. Those are very different. But I commented to someone afterwards, what fascinated me, what, I guess what upset me so, is to say about the patriarch Abraham Avinu, to use such vulgar, inappropriate language about a patriarch, about our forefather, how then can that man go ahead and pray to the God of Elohei Abraham, Elohei Yitzchak, Elohei Yaakov? You know, in his mind, he should skip over Elohei Abraham, because Abraham obviously acted inappropriately. Yitzchak did God knows what, and Yaakov, we can all, you know, who are these men? And there's a great danger, I mean, a real danger, when we read the Navi, and when we are, when the Navi exposes the flaws of these people, for us to discover a lack of reverence in them and the stature that they were. This is Shlomo was one of those season. And so there's a danger, and you have to be careful while we read these things. So we're going to see Chazal, they whitewash to a large degree. They really reread the psukim, they reread the verses in order to say that what it sounds like happened didn't really happen. I don't find that plausible. I think you have to read the verses in their own language. Whereas, but at the same time, even if you're going to accept that these people had flaws, nonetheless, you have to accept that with a level of reverence for the stature of who Shlomo HaMelech was. Shlomo HaMelech had great chachma. He built the Beis HaMikdash. And he wrote Shir HaShirim, and he wrote Kohelet, and he wrote Mishlei, and he was considered a great leader of the Jewish people, perhaps at the pinnacle of the Jewish people. You know, not you. God gave him wisdom. He spoke to God. How many of us have had that experience? So even so, while we're reading of his flaws, and we're reading of his downfall, sadly, nonetheless, it has to be read with a sense of great, great respect and great, great reverence and awe, because without which, what do we have? Who are our avos? You know, they're not people like you and me. And as I've gotten older, definitely, I think if you would listen to a shir, if I would have the opportunity to listen to a shir I gave 6-7 years ago on Abraham or Yitzhak, I think I was probably much more harsh.
Critical.
Critical. Yeah, you remember?
No.
Okay, neither do I. Where's our notes? Right. Whereas as time has gone along, I've come to appreciate, or to my understanding, that we need a sense of reverence, and you're walking, you're balancing. Obviously God and the Navi wants us to see the flaws of Shlomo. But understand, that's what the Rambam says. Don't enter your mind. That Samson, who saved the Jewish people, who Shlomo Melech, he's the king of Israel, he's called Yedid, the good friend of God. They didn't marry non-Jewish women. There's no way. Ella, Sod Hadavar Kahu. I'm not sure what the word Sod means. Oh, I've got to ask Dr. Kelman. Yeah, but if Abraham doesn't say just secret because he says it, what is it, you know? I got to email him. I got to email him. It just so happens that the man who stayed at my house for the weekend, Dr. Kelner, is a Maimonidean expert. So he knows when the Rambam says the word showed about showed hadavar, I want to know what he says, because he says the Rambam is not a mystic. Anyway, the commandment is, when a convert comes to convert, says, why does he want to convert? There's a, you know, well, I hear the Hasidim, I want to be a diamond merchant in 47th Street. They only let Jews in. I'll be Jewish. He wants to be in charge. The Jews have all the power, right? Look at Wolfowitz and... like, all you Jews have power, I want power, so I'm going to be Jewish. Don't call me Goshi now. Oh, but they have pachad, Bobby Kennedy said, he's afraid. For whatever, the im ishu. And, of course, if he's a man, what do we check? Why is he converting? Shemanatanina, the isha Yehudi. Maybe he likes some Jewish girl. Okay. The im ishahi, and if he's a woman, We have to examine why. By the way, this is obvious. The first thing we ask, tell me, what brought you to Judaism? Well, my girlfriend is Jewish, and we're going to get married soon, so I'm really interested in some learning. Right, sorry, I can't help you. You know, and this is explicit in my mind. In learning Zalem Ilah, if you don't find any complaint, Modi Imaham Kovad Alan Old Torah, we tell him the weight of the yoke of Torah. The Torah Shiyesh Bashiyata Al Neharatot. And we tell him how hard it is. Kadesh Yifroshu, maybe they'll decide, not for me. In Kiblu, Velo Parshu, and if they accept the Torah and they don't separate. Mereo Otam Shechazu Mi'ahava, and they come back out of love for Judaism. Mekablu Mosam. We accept them. And we learn that from Ruth. Ruth was strong. She insisted on becoming a Jew. And that's why we accept her. Levikach. Therefore, Lo kiblu beitim gerim kol yemei David Shlomo. The court did not accept any converts in the times of King David and King Solomon. Why? Why? Right. Anybody wanted to join? Why do you, in times of Solomon, why do you want to be a Jew?
Because it's cool.
It's good to be Jews. Right. Anytime somebody wants to become a Jew for ulterior reasons, but not interested. Bimei David shemem min hapachad chazru. Because in the times of David, maybe they were returning because of fear. Maybe they want the greatness of the Jewish people. The prominence. Anyone converts because of one of these extraneous reasons, that is not an acceptable conversion, and they're not considered righteous converts. Who accepted them? They accepted themselves. Right, it's a good question. The Gemara talks about that. It's an excellent question. Okay. Ulafi. 10 lines. What happened to Shlomo? I'm reading. You don't have it. I'm reading. Ulafi shagir Shlomo nashim unisa'an. Because Shlomo converted women and married them. V'hadavar yadua shlo chazu elu ela bishvil davar. So why did these women convert? Why did women convert?
They
converted to marry the king. Right. Ki'ilu hein. It was as if they were non-Jewish and still prohibited. So who converted them?
Sure.
He did. Right. The Beit Din did not. He did. Who can convert someone, technically?
They did. Well, can't it,
what does it take to constitute a Beit Din to convert someone? What does it take to constitute a Beit Din to convert someone?
Three people?
I call you? No. You mean what you're saying, but you're not saying it. Three Jews. Three Jewish men. Anyone can convert someone. I mean, I guess if you want to. Nowadays you can't because they would not be accepted as legitimate converts. I mean, what God would say, I don't know. You know, what does God say? I really have no idea. Let's say three Jews convert, Shaquille O'Neal. Yeah, he converts. Right? And then he sent his census conversion papers to the Rabbanuda Rashid in Israel. And they say, we never heard of Saul Goldberg, Jaime Horowitz, and, Moshe Klein. We never heard of those guys. Sorry, not accepted.
Well, how long did they have to learn, with these three Jews?
Who said they have to learn at all? Did the Rambam say anything about learning? No, I haven't said anything about learning. Rambam is extremely liberal when it comes to conversion. Extremely liberal. Anyway.
You have to want to be a Jew?
What?
Is that what he said? What did they say? You have to want to be declared, that's what
they have to declare a desire to be Jewish, and they'll accept the Jewish practices. And, I think also, remember, we live in a very educated time where people study all kinds of different things. In other words, it was reasonable to require people to study to become Jewish. Back then, nobody studied anything. 100 years ago, 200 years ago, how did you know, how to make food kosher, how to kosher a chicken?
Because your mother did it.
Yeah.
Your father did it.
Nobody ever taught you in Beis Yaakov about salting and soaking. Now they teach them Beis Yaakov because they never see them do it. Nobody does it anymore. Right. Right. How do you know? How do you know anything? How to prepare for Shabbos? How do you know? It's all imitation. So how does a guy know how to do it? This is how we do this, this is how we do that. You wash for bread, you make a mochi, and you're done. That's how you learn. That's how anybody learns. So this idea of learning, this idea of education, of formal education, in order to convert, is a very modern thing. It's really modern thing. And so Shlomo, according to the Midrash, according to the Rambam, and according to, I would say, I don't know, six times, you see it's a machlokes, yes. Shlomo converted the women. But, and I think that's what the Midrash is getting at, the Rambam says, he thought that they would convert, they would bring them to Yerushalayim, and they would accept the practices of the Jewish people. Why not? But they were not interested. They were only marrying him to be the queen of Israel, to be the wife of the king of Israel. And therefore, their conversion was not a conversion. So therefore, why does the Navi call them Nashim Nachriot? Because they were like they were Nachriot, because he converted them, but the conversion didn't really take. Let me do a couple of other, one second, Midrashim, and then, okay. Let's read back to the Navi for a second. Yud Aleph. Why does it say Bar Paro? What? Why? Rashi says because he liked her better. But there's another reason why not to marry, why Bar Paro is unique.
Was she the first?
No, she's Mitzri. Right? What's unique about Mitzri when it comes to marrying a Mitzri?
Not supposed to.
Again, aside from her being a non-Jew, even Egyptian converts may not marry into the general Jewish community. The Torah says, "Adosh Shlishi."
Oh, third generation.
Third generation. So even if he had converted her,
how can there be a third generation?
Kind of, yeah. Because usually you find this sometimes, and you find there's a community like this in Texas where the community converts, so they marry each other for the first three generations. You marry into the convert community. It rings a bell? I don't remember.
There was just a story about that, about a town.
Texas, yeah.
That they converted themselves.
Yeah, we know, yeah. I mean, the whole town. The whole church.
The whole church.
Yeah.
It was a church, and they decided to be Jewish.
Yeah.
And they couldn't find...
One of them was a member of our show. Oh, it's good. You know, it's my father in the home bed.
Because this is...
Well, his family was.
Oh, so it's until the third generation?
No, because I'm not Egyptian. Only Egyptian.
Oh, Egypt. No.
Yeah. Oh, you were nervous, right? I want to tell you about it. Okay.
He was probably taking in...
Mina goyim asher amar Hashem b'nei Yisrael lo tavo behem. From the nations of God said, don't do it. And they may not marry you. Why? Because they will turn your heart away from God to their gods. Those are the women Shlomo loved. Upilat Shim Shlosmiot, he had Sarot, Sar ministresses, 700 and 300 concubines. Vayatu Nashim et Libon. The women, they turned his heart. He followed his heart.
What was forbidden was good.
What?
It was forbidden, so he liked.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Look at that, Doc, and then with this we'll conclude. We'll continue next week. What time is it? It's about that time, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Look at Radak. Radak and Aleph. Amazing Radak. Radak says the following. Nashim Nachoyot Rabbo. See Radak on 116? Yeah? So I think you got me? Good.
7-1.
Stein ra'ot asah bazeh. He did two bad things. Achat, seharbe nasir banasim, v'afilo hayu Yisrael asu lo l'harbot. The first thing he did is he had too many wives. And even if they were Jewish, you can't have that many Jewish wives. I mean, I won't say it. Okay. There's a reason why Shlomo, I'm sorry. Anyway, you may not have too many wives. They will cause your heart to go astray. Kol shekein shayu nachriyot. Shehitu levavo acharei Elohim acherim. Certainly, if they are non-Jewish women who they drew his heart after other gods, what did he believe in? Vehu batach bechachmato, and he trusted his wisdom. Va'amar ani ardeh velo asur. Right? And I will do a lot. I will have more, and I will not be deviated. Zeho she'amar hanavi. And this is what the prophet said, Al yitalel chacham bechachmato. You think you're so smart. Sometimes being smart is a curse. Mm-hmm. Because a person begins to think that he knows all the answers. And when you know the answers, when you begin to think you know the answers, that's just the very beginning of terrible, terrible trouble. Okay, we'll stop here.